what a weekend it was, not only for LSU and Stark Vegas looking fantastic on the defensive side of the football. Of course, you saw Joe Burrow do Joe Burrow things. They got it done. But, of course, we can talk about the Saints up in the Windy City getting things done as well. Just a one-sided performance. Sure, the score, 36-25. It doesn't tell the whole story, but we'll talk about that whole story and much, much more today on a wonderful Monday. Despite the rain, it's a wonderful Monday because all the teams won, baby. Monday, October 21st, 2019.
It'll be first down and 10 for the Tigers at their own 40-yard line. So, again, relatively good field position here, leading 9-7. First down play, Burrow in the pocket. Slings towards the far side, catching it. Racy McMath has it down the far sideline. 10-5, touchdown, Tigers! Again, they'll go with two receivers just off the formation to the right, three receivers left side. Empty backfield for Burrow. Looking right, comes back across the middle. Jefferson has it in the end zone. Touchdown, Tigers!
Third and goal from the Chicago 7. Saints leading it 2-0. 3:19 to go here in the first quarter in Chicago. Bridgewater in the shotgun. Gets the snap. Has time. Looking right, throwing right. Ball's caught at the 5. And into the end zone, Josh Hill, the tight end. Touchdown, New Orleans! Kick in the air, and Cordarrelle Patterson will have a chance to return this one as he fields it at the goal line. Patterson to the 5, 10, up the middle at the 15, 20, left side 30, breaks a tackle, 35, he may go! Midfield, 40, 35, 30, right sideline, 20, 15, 10, 5, touchdown, Cordarrelle Patterson, and the Bears are right back in it.
Here's a 2-1.
And that's driven deep to left center field. Garner is going back! Games to 2.
What a great moment in the history of Astros baseball. Jose Altuve crushing the dreams of the New York Yankees. And what a way to kind of start off a Monday edition of the Jordy Holtberg Show right here on 103.7 The Game and also 103.7thegame.com. Currently having a little bit of technical difficulties. It is what it is, but hopefully we can get Jordy back because we've got a fun show for you today. Of course, we'll have Brooks Cabina on 2:15 to recap what happened between the LSU Tigers and Mississippi State, what that full moon was like in Stark Vegas, and also, of course, we'll talk a little Saints with our guy Bob Rose. He'll be joining the program at 2:30, and then at 3:30, we'll be talking with the man himself, Ross Dellinger, and man, oh man, a lot of things to talk about when it comes to the world of college football. Last weekend, we almost saw, it was very wild to see the fact Kansas almost beat Texas over the weekend. And also a lot of other things, of course, the Nittany Lions, Michigan game, a lot of interesting storylines coming away from a big weekend in college football. Wisconsin losing to Illinois, definitely the biggest shock to the system of the college football weekend. But, of course, we also are going to wind up talking a lot more about that. A wild, wild start to the season. Just a wild start to what's going on with college football as we start getting into what matters the absolute most. And what matters the most? It is the college football playoff. A lot of madness going on, and maybe, just maybe, we could be talking about in a few weeks' time the conversation of, will there be a two teams from the SEC making the college football playoff? It's always going to be an interesting topic, but it feels like more and more likely this is going to happen. So we're going to keep our eyes glued to see what's going on over there. But in the meantime, we'll kind of keep things going on. Jordy Holtberg Show right here on 103.7 The Game. CD filling in a little bit. Hopefully we can get Jordy back on the air. Currently trying to get some technical difficulties. The kinks worked out. But in the meantime and in between time, we got some sound from over the weekend, even more of it. And Sean Payton, he opened up his statements on Sunday after the win over Chicago and recapped a little bit about it.
little bit in the red zone. I thought defensively we were outstanding again. We didn't allow a rushing first down, I don't think. We knew we were playing a good return team. They had the kickoff return. That kind of, you know, brought that game closer. But I thought as the second half went on, I thought clearly we outrushed them. We won that battle up front. That was significant. If you win that, you're going to win most of the games.
Yeah, and they wound up winning that game, and it was a significant victory just looking at how everything worked out without Alvin Kamara, without Jared Cook, without all the things that everybody has been talking about. And we saw one player in particular, Latavius Murray, shine, 27 carries, 119 yards, and 2 touchdowns. He put the team on his back a little bit, and needless to say, Peyton, pretty proud of the man.
I think he has real good vision. He's got... He's got the ability to cut back and feel a run, maybe being over pursued. He's got speed. And so he had a handful of those cuts today that, you know, he saw a hole. He felt something, and I thought he ran with power, but he also ran with speed. Yeah, he had a touchdown called back. It was a real good run. It was a big game for him. I was proud of him.
And I think undoubtedly everybody else is pretty proud of him. They're proud of the entire team, the way everything worked out. You talk about the Saints, and you talk about everything they've had to deal with over the last, like, 6-7 weeks is dealing with the talk about the second Drew Brees was injured, the Saints are done, the Saints are done, and now things have turned around, and we're talking about the Saints possibly being a top one or top two seed in the NFC. Of course, you're kind of waiting to see what's going to happen with the Green Bay Packers and the San Francisco 49ers. Can the 49ers keep that momentum going? Because they're looking really, really good so far this season. The Rams dropped off a little bit. They currently have 3 losses. The Saints, their lone blemish is that Rams game. So right here, right now, they feel like they're a top three team in the NFC. But I wouldn't be surprised if Drew Brees is back 100% healthy come week number 10. I think things are going to be turned around and talk about what's going to happen with Teddy Bridgewater. Teddy Two Gloves only on a 1-year contract. Don't forget about that. And obviously, if Drew Brees doesn't want to hang it up just yet, he's going to have to hang around a bit when I'm talking about, obviously, Teddy Bridgewater, if he wants to have an opportunity to lead this team to the best possible situation. And you're not having to necessarily worry as much about the future of the Saints, sans Drew Brees. We've seen what's happened over the last few weeks, so that's something to keep an eye on. But, of course, we'll flip it over to what's going on with Mississippi State and LSU. It was stark raving mad, and also a lot of memes about Joe Burrow, full moon over Starkville at about 4 o'clock in the afternoon. And Coach O, kind of recap the win over Mississippi State.
We didn't play our best game today, but you know what? I knew this day was going to come. And I'm proud of our defense. 3 turnovers the first half. We had to settle for some field goals. We wasn't as sharp as we've been on offense, but I knew the offense was going to get the deep pass going. And overall, big win for our team.
And I'd have to agree. That's the one big thing you're going to kind of have to look at going forward is what happens with the LSU Tigers and that offense. And they didn't necessarily be the biggest. They weren't necessarily the biggest and the best, but they still looked really, really good. But, you know, Coach O kind of talked about the fact that the offense wasn't necessarily firing on all cylinders, especially in the first half. Probably the last, like, 5 minutes of the first half, things turned around. We saw the defense get some big stops, and then LSU quickly responded with some quick drives. Of course, that 80-yard touchdown to one. Racy McMath, who was definitely off to the races, that turned around the entire story of the game on its head. And Coach O mentioned that the offense isn't always going to be on fire.
Well, you know, your offense is not going to play great on fire every week. You just can't expect that. There are going to be a time where it's going to be raining and you're going to be on the road and the offense is not playing. That's why you got to play great defense. And I thought the defense did a phenomenal job today up to the last series.
And give credit where credit is due. Jacoby Stevens looked fantastic in that performance. And it was justifiably so. He was named SEC Defensive Player of the Week earlier today. Easy to know what his stat line was, and it was pretty darn good. A big interception, 8 tackles, a sack for a 1-yard loss. But that one-handed interception kind of put things over the top. It was featured as a top 10 play. And that wound up kind of causing the game to get a little bit out of hand, especially late in the first half. And it led to an LSU touchdown, make it 22-7 just five plays later to really take things over in LSU-Mississippi State game. Give credit to that defense for looking positively fantastic. And speaking of LSU, we'll kind of probably talk about this later on in the hour, about the fact that men's basketball in the preseason AP poll at number 22, one of three SEC teams to make it into the AP Top 25 preseason poll on the basketball side of things, which feels kind of surprising, I would say. I definitely feel like you look at it, Kentucky obviously is always going to be one of the top five teams in the country. They continue to kind of have that streak going. But LSU making it in makes it seem like the SEC on the basketball side of things is starting to mean, pun intended, just a little bit more. But, you know, we'll flip it on over to what happened with the Houston Astros getting it done. And A.J. Hinch just wanted to end that series ASAP.
We wanted to win as fast as possible, and that was, one, is to get a little bit of rest before the World Series, and number two is it's the easiest way to line things up moving forward. Not getting pushed to the brink of Game 7 and having to use not just Garrett, but it would have been the entire bullpen again, and so we're lined up better to give ourselves a chance to win another World Championship.
But, of course, the hero of it all, Jose Altuve, the ALCS MVP and the former AL MVP, talked about his plan approaching the plate.
I was just thinking something I can drive. You know, I have my game plan. You know, I wasn't trying to hit a homer. I was just thinking to hit the ball hard, get on base, keep the momentum. You know, Tens got the ball, went out, and, you know, we won the game.
Definitely a huge step in the right direction for the Houston Astros to complete the win of the ALCS and really show that they have the Yankees number when it comes to the postseason, the part of the year that matters the absolute most. And we're going to go ahead and take a quick timeout on the floor. Coming up next, we'll talk with Brooks Cabina, recap the game between LSU and Mississippi State, and a whole lot more. You're listening to Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game at 103.7thegame.com. Live, as always, from the 237 Roof Studios. Hopefully, we get Jordy Holtberg back on the air.
Are you looking for the latest updates on what is happening with the UL Raging? There's only one place you'll find all the movers, shakers, and Tigers newsmakers. And it's right here on the Jordy Holtberg Show on 103.7 The Game.
Defense came to play today. The turnovers really helped us, made it hard for their offense. I thought we did very well on defense, and it gave us a little time for the offense to get hot. I thought they got hot in the third quarter with the deep balls. Obviously, we took Joe out with about 9 minutes left. We could have scored more points, but we didn't want that to happen.
Welcome back to the Jordy Holtberg Show right here on Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game. And 1037thegame.com, live from the 237 Roof Studios. And now we're going to go over to the ARCO Equipment Hotline, talk to that guy, Brooks Cabina. We talk to him every single Monday after an LSU win, after an LSU loss. But right now, they haven't lost, but they've looked fantastic throughout the season. And after a 36-13 victory over those dreaded Mississippi State Bulldogs in Starkville, kind of changing a trend that had been there for a little bit, we're going to talk with Brooks Cabina of The Advocate. Brooks, what's going on, man?
Hey, man. Another week. Another top 10 matchup to cover.
Another top 10 matchup to cover. And, of course, it's yet another 2:30 p.m. matchup. Before we get to what happened last week against Mississippi State and move ahead to Auburn, what are your thoughts on LSU the next 3 weeks they're playing? They're going to be prime time in terms of SEC on CBS action, 2:30 p.m. Were you surprised to see this kind of thing go down the way it has, where you were playing three straight 2:30 games?
No, I didn't. I mean, there was the thought, the biggest question was more these past couple of weeks. Alabama, that looked like it was going to be an afternoon game ever since CBS announced that they were going to use their one night game with Georgia and Notre Dame earlier on in the year, which ended up being a hell of a game. So I think they're satisfied with the way that turned out. But the rest, I mean, these past couple of games, the Mississippi State game was almost an 11 a.m. kickoff again, and then we would have had a whole other conversation there, how they would have played three 11 a.m. games this year, which would have been the first time in a long time for them to do that, it seems. But right now, the next couple, the 2:30, Auburn was the same kickoff last year for Auburn and Alabama. And the last time it was 2:30, I think LSU won was back in 2010, but it was in Tuscaloosa, 2010, I believe, and they won that game. So for LSU fans, maybe that's a good thing.
Exactly. It's also you could think it's definitely a good thing for LSU because the fact now it's not the bright lights, big city vibe that we always talk about when it comes to the matchup between LSU and Alabama. It's always under the bright lights, be it at Tiger Stadium or Bryant Denny in T-Town. We're seeing it now be that 2:30 game. It's all official now. No more rumor and innuendo of the four-letter network trying to snatch that bad boy up.
No, I mean, they were never going to let that one go away. I mean, that's just too big of a game. And yeah, I mean, it's a big game. And if LSU takes care of business, it could be LSU number one versus Alabama number two. There's plenty of people that are filtering over and from the AP poll voting LSU number one. And I'll be honest, I'm not one of those yet. I have Ohio State one, but honestly, if LSU takes care of business against Auburn this week, their resume is just going to speak for itself, and they're going to vault to the number one ranking. Alabama has looked impressive, but they just haven't had the same kind of wins. And Tua Tagovailoa being out next week, which is high ankle sprain, I'm sure most of your listeners and everybody else is kind of aware that he's going through that treatment, the tightrope treatment that allows him to come back a little quicker instead of waiting for that to recover on its own. That'll make you really wonder how healthy Tua is going to be in that game. And a lot of people have had this conversation before. Is LSU prepared to beat Alabama this year? All the things that just keep happening to Alabama in the injury department just seems like it's stacking up towards LSU's way when they may have been favored anyway.
Talking right now with Brooks Cabina of the Advocate, and, you know, we kind of got to look back at last week's game. And we came back from the break talking about that defense came to play in a big way, and we saw them kind of disrupt the game throughout. I mean, the first drive, Mississippi State felt a little gutsy, went for it on fourth down. LSU gets the stop, and we saw them continue to kind of slow down a Mississippi State offense that they've had a hard time doing so in recent years, especially, as mentioned before, in Stark Vegas.
Yeah, I mean, what it was is the rotation on defense. I wrote about this last week, and they got it back the last game against Florida. You saw it a little bit on the defensive line. They keep rotating in new people. Rashard Lawrence and Glenn Logan came back from injury against Florida, and they were even more healthy against Auburn and, I mean, Mississippi State, and they kept rotating them in. And Neil Farrell and Braden Fajoco both continue to play well at defensive end, and I think you're starting to see how deep the defense can be and keep up with the pace of its offense. And I think you saw that there. The other thing, and I pointed this out last week in a story, was in Mississippi State, there were only 13 other teams in all of FBS that turned the ball over than they did. And with a true freshman getting the start in that week, you were going to expect maybe some issues there. And that's exactly what happened. LSU got three turnovers in that game. And we're able to turn those into more points. So, I mean, the defense was probably going to play better in that game than they did against Florida, but certainly saw some good things from the secondary. They did what they were supposed to do in a game when then they were supposed to be dominant. So, LSU is playing more like a complete team right whenever they need to.
Talk right now with Brooks Cabina of the Advocate, and of course, we got to kind of flip things over. Obviously, it was a relatively one-sided affair when you just look deeper into it outside of the scoreboard, but it was just one-sided. Felt like for most of that late first half onwards, LSU was able to take control. But looking ahead to next week when LSU plays Auburn inside Tiger Stadium, I think it's always a weird matchup between these two. What's your early thoughts on what's going to happen between these two programs?
So To juxtapose last week to this, I think it's good to address the red zone issues LSU had against Mississippi State and how that's probably going to be different against Auburn. I mean, it always does come down to the game plan, and I wrote about this yesterday, and it's online right now. We do a film breakdown every week, and Mississippi State was using what Joe Burrow in the football world is called a green dog blitz, which basically means the linebacker is watching the running back, and if he stays in the block, he blitzes. If he goes out to run, you know, he covers him. It's a man-to-man assignment. It actually helps out pretty nicely against the run-pass option where the running back is the first read in the zone read. And Mississippi State was doing that, and they were having plenty of success. Will Auburn do that? I have a hard time thinking they will, because their front seven is so much more dominant on the defensive line than anybody else LSU has seen. They're better up front and allow that to dominate, you know, and allow them to put more people in coverage in the secondary, where Auburn has had some struggles this year. So, you know, talking to Ed Ogeron about it today, I think what you're mainly looking for between LSU and Auburn, especially up in the front, is LSU wants to go five-man protection. We've talked about this on the show before. They want to spread and utilize as many wide receivers and running backs in the passing game as possible. And that means the linemen are going to have to block their one-on-ones. There's a guy who will probably be a first-round pick, Derrick Brown, a defensive tackle, and Ed Ogeron recruited him, loved him. And he said, we're going to have to block him one-on-one, and if we can't do it, then they're going to have to bring in a running back, a tight end to block, and that's going to adjust how they're going to be on offense. And you saw how that limited the team last year. So they definitely want to be able to make their blocks one-on-one and not have to adjust the things they're doing. So that's the main thing up front. Is LSU's offensive line going to be able to win one-on-one and five-man protection? If not, then LSU's going to have to adjust on the fly.
Brooks, thanks so much for coming on, my man. We'll probably talk to you next week.
Absolutely, man, always.
All right, that was Brooks Cabina. You can follow him on Twitter at @bcabina. And speaking of that LSU-Auburn game coming up in just a few days, hey, if you want to go check out the game, all you got to do is text EARTHQUAKE to 68683. That's EARTHQUAKE to 68683 for a chance to win a pair of tickets to cheer on the LSU Tigers in this Saturday's game against Auburn, the Tigers / War Eagles / Plainsmen in Death Valley, courtesy of us here at 103.7 The Game. And 1037thegame.com. We'll be back after this. Going to take a quick timeout on the floor. And then we'll talk with our guy, Bob Rose. A little recap of what happened between the Saints and the Vikings. After this on the Jordy Holtbert Show on 1037 The Game and 1037thegame.com.
Saver. At Walgreens, we like the way you save on things. Take afternoon matinees. You know they...
Taking the hottest topics out there and dousing them in gasoline. It's the Jordy Holtbert Show on 103.7 The Game.
I say we have a ton of confidence and we play this game with confidence and we take pride in having confidence around here. You watch our defense, they're flying around. I think at one point in the game, it held Chicago to 4 first downs. If you can do that, you know, on the defensive side of the ball, all that does is just continue to get the offense more confidence. Like, man, you know, we could just score 21 points. You know, our defense is going to do the rest.
Very accurate, Teddy Bridgewater. I look, before we get to our guest, shout out, electric, techno wizard Charles Sagona under the Delta Media umbrella for fixing what was wrong with this microphone computer and all that stuff. So Charles, thank you very much. CD, thank you for handling the first two segments of the show, but we're back. We're better than ever. Great to be with you. Saints winners 36-25 over the Chicago Bears, 5-0 since Drew Brees left with the thumb injury. Up next, the Arizona Cardinals, who've won 3 in a row. But before we get, we don't want to look ahead. We want to look back. And Bob Rose of Canal Street Chronicles, kind enough to join us each and every Monday. Bob, I mean, sheesh, Louise. Another game, another win, and another rising star. I mean, no Breeze, no Kamara, no Cooks, no Hendrickson. I mean, and on so many players out. But Latavius Murray steps up. Good afternoon, my friend. Ever since we've been doing this, it's been good luck, so we got to keep going. What a win for the Saints against Chicago.
And thank you so much for having me, as always, my friend. And I'm knocking on wood whenever you call me a good luck charm, because that never applies to the rest of my life. I'll take some of that. In our statistical analysis, the only thing that you start with is just one word, and that is wow. I expected New Orleans to win this game, but I expected it to be a close, low-scoring defensive battle. I like the Saints' chances, definitely on the defensive side of the ball. And I did expect even a shorthanded New Orleans offense to make some plays. But I'll tell you what, they came out so aggressive, and they did not bat an eye against one of the most respected defenses in the NFL. I mean, Teddy Bridgewater played an outstanding game. The numbers were solid, you know, 281 yards and two scores through the air, and most importantly, no interceptions.
Correct.
That number would have obviously been a lot higher if Teddy Ginn would have held on to that beautifully thrown long scoring pass. But that's the thing that's so special about this Saints team. They can miss plays like that, where in the past, where if we would see a Saints team kind of misfire on an offensive opportunity, you're just kind of clenching your teeth and clenching your fist because you don't know what the defense is going to give up right after that. Well, that's certainly not the case with this team. They've been winning games on the defensive side of the ball. The offense, the offensive playmakers come up big. Latavius Murray, I agree with you. I thought he played a spectacular football game. Michael Thomas was outstanding as always with another 9 catches and 130 plus through the air. And the offensive line just pulverized the Chicago front seven. I mean, the Saints could do whatever they wanted to in the second half because that offensive line just imposed their will. But it's not like we're calling Chicago the next version of the greatest show on turf or anything like that.
Right.
We know the Bears are offensively challenged. But anytime you hold an NFL team to 4 yards in a quarter, which is what New Orleans did in the third quarter, and basically put the game away with what they did on the offensive side of the ball. And I believe that Chicago at one time had 4 first downs. Trubisky had 120 yards through the air before those final 2 drives when the Saints were just playing soft just basically running out the clock. You can't say enough about what Dennis Allen and that whole crew is doing on the defensive side of the football.
Held Chicago to 17 net yards rushing. I don't know why Chicago doesn't try to. They tried to throw it every time. I don't understand all that. Special teams comes up with big plays. They're just resilient. And as Teddy Bridgewater said, this team knows how to survive. So he doesn't turn the ball over. He throws for 281, as you mentioned. They get a 119 on the ground from Murray. They don't turn the ball over. They create 3 turnovers or whatever it was. They're remarkable. But I got to talk about this back and forth about Drew Brees, because all the reporters and all the analysts for Fox were saying they talked to Sean Payton before the game. They talked to Drew Brees, and they're talking about he's practicing this week and he's playing against Arizona. Then all of a sudden, Sean Payton said, no, that's not accurate. That's incorrect. And then he declined to elaborate. So you read between the tea leaves. What's going on here?
I think what's going on is the same thing you and I have thought from the start, that even if Brees' rehab goes well, if the team is winning football games without him, they're probably going to try to keep him on the shelf as long as they can. And I don't mean the rest of the season or anything silly like that. I have a feeling that Sean Payton had his eye on the bye week. Would it surprise me if Brees was back on the practice field this week? No, not from the things that you're hearing. It actually wouldn't even surprise me if he might get a helmet as a backup on Sunday. Just in an emergency quarterback situation. And when you heard some of the national analysts talk about their conversations with Sean Payton, that began to enter my mind was, hey, maybe Brees does get a hat as a backup. Let him allow Sean allow Taysom to do a little bit more in the offense like he's wanted him to do.
Okay.
But I would be absolutely shocked if Drew Brees took significant snaps on Sunday against Arizona. I think that they have had this bye week and him coming back against Atlanta the following week on November 10th. I think that they have had that highlighted and circled the whole time. And the things that you're hearing from Brees' rehab, it has gone pretty well. He's been seen even on the sidelines without any kind of splint or protection on that hand, which I think is a good sign. But even all the YouTube videos and Instagram, pictures of him gripping a football, it was usually a Nerf football. the makeup of a professional football obviously is a lot different than that. And plus, you don't want to. There's no need to rush your Hall of Fame quarterback back out there. You're 5-0 without him. If 5-0 without him, you're still playing very well. It's not like Drew's job is in danger or anything like that. When he is ready, the starting job is his once again. But there is no more nightmare scenario than trying to rush him back out too quickly when you don't necessarily need him to. Him take a hit on that hand before it's ready and fully healed, and then he'd be on the shelf for the rest of the season. So I expect Teddy Bridgewater to get the starting nod again. I think the best-case scenario as far as Drew Brees is concerned would be he gets a hat and maybe suits up as an emergency quarterback if things go really sideways on Sunday.
That makes perfect sense. Bob Rose, Canal Street Chronicles. We talked about Latavius Murray, but we got to talk about Zach Lyon. Okay, he gets a hand on a kick, blocks it, which negated him roughing the kicker. He does. I mean, what a great play call by Sean Payton, where he gets the handoff and he runs horizontally and pitches it back to Taysom Hill, who heads upfield for a big first down. That was terrific. And then the Phantom. Holding call on the punt return for a touchdown. I mean, that's absurd. I mean, from what I saw, I guess I've got my black and gold sunglasses on, but didn't look like a hold to me. But Zach Lyon getting his name in the stat sheet.
Yeah, and I'm happy to see that. You know, Lyon is a throwback player, and Payton has always loved throwback players at the fullback position, and Lyon certainly fits that build. For all we have talked about, Ingram over the years and Kamara the last couple of years, and now Murray's exploits in the offensive backfield and Taysom Hill as well. It starts with, yes, the offensive line, and I think more and more people are giving credit to them, but not nearly enough people are giving credit to Zach Lyon and what he is able to do. He is an outstanding lead blocker, and when the team does use him as a receiver in the flat or near the goal line, he almost always delivers. And he is just a hard. He's gonna strap your, make you strap your chin strap, and bring it every single play, because he's gonna hit you. You know, like I said, he's a throwback player, so I don't know how you can't love the guy. And it's just, it is nice to see him get his name on the stat sheet, and get those pats on the back from fantasy owners who own him everywhere.
Bob Rose joining us. Gee whiz, so many positives, but what I hated, they're going to work on how to field onside kicks this week, right? I mean, goodness gracious. And the thing that caused the ripple effect of not recovering that is you leave some starters in late and Eli Apple gets an unknown injury, and that's the worst thing that could possibly happen at a position where you're pretty darn thin already, and especially with a guy that's been playing great. Man, I hate to see that.
Yeah, absolutely, and I'll spare you the language that I used when it happened. Eli Apple, right alongside with Marshawn Lattimore, has been playing elite coverage football in that secondary, and just as much responsible for the Saints' defensive success as that defensive front line or DeMario Davis in the linebacking core has been the play of Lattimore and Apple. And I'll be honest, when it happened, it looked really ugly. But any reports I've seen, heard, or read, Apple was walking around with just a little hint of a limp afterward. Obviously, they're going to MRI him probably today or tomorrow. It wouldn't surprise me if he did, even if he was okay, if they did sit him out this Arizona game. Again, with an extra week of recovery, he gets two full weeks to recover now, before they have to face the Falcons in that stretch run that they that New Orleans has in front of them. So at least he walked off the field, like they said. But like you pointed out, it could have been so much worse on a play and a drive that never should have happened. The Saints really need to be smarter on special teams, and that's what it boiled down to. I mean, footballs are shaped the way they are, They're gonna give you funny bounces every now and then. It's one of the things that's most entertaining about this game. But you have to, when you're on that hands unit on the special teams, obviously you're going to be out there in a vital situation. You have to be smart above all else. and Michael Thomas and really the rest of that unit, they were not smart at all. Hopefully it doesn't cost them their starting cornerback for very long as far as an injury goes. But it's also the kind of thing that that Peyton and that coaching staff is going to be working hard on this week.
Speaking of Sean Payton, Bob Rose, has he ever done a better job than he's done this season in 2019 as the head coach of the Saints?
No, I don't think he has. You could point out to the 2006 season, and obviously that was a rebirth in so many ways for the Saints organization and really that entire region. You could point to that as coach of the year type of stuff. And even 2009, as talented as that team was, they did falter a little bit down the stretch of the regular season, as most of us remember. And he did such a spectacular job of regrouping that team and their confidence for that playoff run and prepared the Saints to take on the almighty Peyton Manning in the Super Bowl. You can't say enough about the coaching job that he and his staff did there. But as far as the regular season goes, I'm hard pressed to say, maybe 2009 or 2006 might compare. But I would take this 2019 coaching job that he is doing. This team, it ripples from confidence from top to bottom, and they have certainly taken on the combative and energetic style of their head coach. When you consider that a couple of years ago, most people in the media had Peyton packing his bags and looking for jobs elsewhere. He did, in my opinion, at times look a little bit tired and worn out on the sidelines or in press conferences. Between this year and even last year, I've never seen him more rejuvenated. This team starts with the abilities and the skills and the confidence of Coach Peyton and just kind of trickles down from there.
Bob Rose, Canal Street Chronicles, will let you out on this one. The NFL trade deadline is a week from Tuesday, October 29th at 3 o'clock Central Time. Are the Saints going to be involved in – it's hard to say when you're playing as well as you are. You're leading your division, but you've got some injuries. Are you pleased with your wide receivers? Do the Saints do anything prior to a week from tomorrow?
I don't think that they do. And having said that, I'm on the fence. I could go either way because we know that Peyton and Mickey Loomis do love to wheel and deal. And we saw them make such a big trade for Apple last year. If Apple turns out to be significantly hurt and he's going to miss a good chunk of time, you may see the Saints kind of knocking on the doors of other teams for perhaps a cornerback receiver. You bring up a great point. And I called for the team to inquire about Emmanuel Sanders of the Denver Broncos a couple of weeks ago. I think Sanders would be an outstanding fit in this offense. And then just a few days ago, word out of Denver now that they are fielding offers for Sanders. But remember, the Saints team, has a lot of pending free agents this offseason. Now, I think that they can re-sign most of their own, most of the core, with the salary cap room that they'll have. But they're going to have to replenish some of those potential losses with draft picks, too. And as it stands right now, I believe New Orleans has 5 draft picks going into the 2020 draft. So you don't necessarily want them to part with too many of those draft picks. Okay. So like I said, it's been a lot. I mentioned the health of Apple. I think if he is going to be healthy pretty quickly, I think that they'll stand pat in the secondary. And a lot depends on Tre'Quan Smith. We saw him try to come back a couple weeks ago against, I believe it was Tampa, with that ankle injury, re-aggravate it, and now he's missed the last two. If they can get him back on the field, I actually feel fairly comfortable with the Saints' receiving depth, certainly comfortable enough to not make a big move and part with perhaps a valuable day two draft pick for someone like Sanders, who will also be a free agent at the end of the year. So my inclination is to say the Saints will probably stand pat as it sits right now.
All right, Arizona Cardinals coming up next. The Cardinals have won three in a row. They've got the Heisman Trophy winner, Kyler Murray, at the quarterback spot. We'll see what happens. So you don't want to go get A.J. Green from Cincinnati. Okay, all right. You don't want to get Patrick Peterson from Arizona. Okay, I understand it takes a lot. I got you. Bob Rose, you're the best, buddy. Thank you so much for your time. I greatly appreciate it. Enjoy your week.
Oh, always a pleasure, my friend. You too, and who dat, everyone.
Who dat? All right, we'll take a timeout. Everything seems to be working now. We're good. I think it was the rain, the thunder, and the lightning. A non-Chamber of Commerce day, but we're there, and we're better than ever. And we'll wrap up our number one next here. The Jordy Helfert Show, 103.7 The Game, 1037thegame.com.
Ghouls and Ghosts. You're listening to the Jordy Holtberg Show on Acadiana Sports Station 103.7 The Game. Want to get in on the action? Call us up on the Ardco Equipment Hotline at 337-706-0111.
All right, welcome back. We all know that this Saturday, it's another game in Death Valley. Two Tigers coming to town will be playing. The Auburn Tigers, also known as the War Eagles, and the Plainsmen. They can't ever figure it out. And LSU, one of the great rivalries in the Southeastern Conference, 2:30 kickoff. You can listen to it right here on 103.7 The Game with the pregame show starting at 12:30. And we want to give you some tickets, give you the opportunity to win some free tickets to another big-time game. Look, I got a call from LSU Sunday. Jordy, can you get on the radio and can you help us out? I said, absolutely. What do you want? He said, we want the same kind of vibe that LSU had against Florida this Saturday against Auburn. I said, that's not a problem. I'll do everything I can to help you out. It doesn't matter if it's a late game or a day game. It's a game. And you show up. And you cheer and you make it uncomfortable for the other team. So here's your chance to win some tickets, compliments of 103.7 The Game. We want to send you to Death Valley this Saturday to help cheer on LSU to an SEC victory over Auburn. Text Earthquake. Remember the Earthquake game? Tommy Hodson, Eddie Fuller. Yeah, seismic graph right there on campus. Boom. Text Earthquake to 68683. That's Earthquake to 68683. For your chance to win a pair of tickets for this Saturday's Auburn-LSU game in Death Valley, courtesy of 103.7 The Game and 103.7thegame.com. Yeah, that was an exciting night. LSU couldn't do anything in that game. Two great defenses. Auburn led 6-0, and it was late. You got to wonder, what the heck's going on? That was the greatest win in the Mike Archer era. Hodson to Fuller, and they had another play just before that, and they dropped a pass, but then they connected to Fuller, and the rest was history. All I can say about LSU Mississippi State is this. I thought LSU would blow them out of the water. I thought LSU could name a score. I really did. But, you know, kids are kids, humans are humans, and sometimes, you know, you don't always have your A game. You just don't. But you still put a beat down on an SEC team that was desperate for a win, that needed one badly. And for all intents and purposes, you're up 36-7 in the third quarter. Then you substitute here, you substitute there, you get out of your rhythm, and Mississippi State makes the score look closer than it really, really was. But Joe Burrow continued to do what Joe Burrow does. He wound up throwing four touchdowns. That gives him a single-season record worth 29 touchdown passes on the day. Wow. It was close, and then LSU just blew him out of the water. Mississippi State had no answer. They played hard early. They felt good, and LSU helped him out by settling for three consecutive field goals inside the red zone. Again, you're not always going to be on your A game, but when you can score like they can score and put up the numbers that they do, you're in good shape. But as Joe Burrow said, if we play like that Saturday against Auburn, we'll get beat. Sending a message to his team. We'll talk much, much more about it as we roll on. Okay, hour number one in the books, brought to you by ShopRite Tobacco Plus. Discount outlets with 60 of them in southern and central Louisiana. If you can't shop right at ShopRite, you can't shop right at all. Become a Buku Rewards member. Simple, easy, and the savings come back to you. All right, busy second hour coming up. Stay with us.
Live from the 237 Roof Studio. Live from the 237 Roof Studios in Upper Lafayette.
Tigers pull off another miracle.
This is Acadiana Sports Station, 1037 The Game.
Touchdown, New Orleans!
Streaming live on the 1037 The Game mobile app and online at 1037thegame.com.
He struck him out, and the Tigers have won!
This is the Jordy Hultberg Show. Get involved and call 337-706-0111. Follow along at 1037 The Game on Facebook and Twitter. And now it's time. Here's your host, Jordy Hultberg.
Hour two of two, and away we go on a Monday. It's a great day to be a football fan, isn't it? I mean, the Saints are winning. The Tigers are undefeated, still number two in the country in the AP poll, number three in the coaches poll. The Raging Cajuns had a big win on Thursday night in the Sun Belt Conference, and everything is smooth sailing as we speak with bigger fish to fry down the road. And Joe Burrow's wardrobe malfunction continues to make headlines. He was even on the Jimmy Fallon show. So good for Joe Burrow. How about that? Just keep throwing those touchdown passes, my friend. Just keep slinging them. 29 in seven games. Honestly, I mean, we're talking LSU football here. Honestly, never in my wildest imaginations. And for everybody that keeps track of these kind of things and is making all these speculations, he has now surpassed Tua Tagovailoa as the front runner for the Heisman Trophy. Tua's going to miss next week. He had that quick little surgical procedure on the high ankle sprain. He promised his team he would be back for the LSU game. And good, I want him back. Let's beat them at their best and bring our best, and let's get it on. And let's get it on as we do each and every day at this time of day with our daily walk around the sports water cooler. CD, do your thing.
Here's today's Hot Topics, brought to you by Cajun Chef. Spice up your life with Cajun Chef products. Delectably delicious, decidedly better.
All right, so defense continues to win for the Saints, and offense continues to win. But to me, CD, I thought LSU's defense was pretty good. I thought those two safeties were really, really good for LSU. And so they keep playing like that. They look like they're rounding into form at the right time. Good afternoon, sir, and thank you for helping out early on when we had this technical – we had a Joe Burrow technical malfunction.
Caught with the pants down a little bit on a Monday afternoon. It's all good, Jordy. It's all good. I appreciate it. But, Jordy, of course, I think we do our Monday headlines on a Friday, Jordy, but I did not expect to be the headline on a Tuesday to be this. Tua 30. We're talking about it. It's going to be 2:30 kickoff. LSU, Bama, three straight games for the Tigers on SEC on CBS. Are you surprised to see them have three straight games at 2:30 on top of all the 11 a.m. games they've had this year?
No, because I've said this so many times. I apologize, but as my buddy Nick Saban always told me, if you're playing at 2:30, that means you got a really good team. They don't put garbage at 2:30. So CBS has to be – when CBS, if they had a do-over, if they'd had, in the words of our illustrious leader, Chuck Wood, would have a mulligan, they would say, okay, Georgia, Notre Dame, we're going to play you at 2:30. We're going to take the LSU-Alabama game primetime at 7:30. They only get one of those. And CBS sure as heck ain't giving up LSU-Alabama to any other network. No, they've got the first right. They're going to take it. They'll build it up. It doesn't matter what time the game is. Let's worry about that when the time comes. They got to get past Auburn. And as I said earlier, LSU called me up and they said, Jordy, do your part. I said, I always do my part. Do it even more so. We need Death Valley rocking at a 2:30 in the afternoon kind of a deal. And look, it's going to get dark eventually because we're fixing to be out of daylight savings time, and it's getting dark earlier and earlier and earlier, if you know what I mean.
Yep.
I think there's so much at stake here. I think we understand that these games have been very, very close of late. It took a field goal by Cole Tracy at the buzzer to win it last year. Yeah, and there's a lot of people around here that still don't forget Tommy Tuberville with the cigar smoking at midfield. So there's a lot of people that still have a lot of hatred for Auburn. So a dangerous foe with a very good defense. Tigers got to be ready, and the fans have to do their part.
It's always a dangerous matchup just looking at how things have been. LSU-Auburn, it's always been a wild one. We saw last year Cole Tracy, the earthquake game. There's so many moments in just the history of LSU-Auburn. What's your favorite moment in the history of LSU-Auburn on the football field?
The wildest I ever saw was at Auburn when the old basketball barn burned down next door, and they had flames coming over the top of the stadium. It was the scariest. I've never, ever, ever, ever seen anything quite like that. They didn't stop the game. They kept playing, but it was bizarre, man. It was really, really bizarre. There have been so many great games. I'm going way back when I was a kid, way back when LSU always played at night, but at one time, I can't remember the year it was, but LSU played Auburn in the afternoon. It was a shocker. And on the opening play, Charlie McClendon called for a halfback pass. Buddy Lee lined up at a halfback spot, and he threw it down the field to Andy Hamilton, and LSU held on. That's when they had George Bevan and Mike Anderson at linebackers, and they had a fourth down play and stopped. It was a great game. This was a long, long time ago. I was just a little kid. But I remember that. There's a lot of great games. The earthquake game, the Matt Flynn to you can't see me, Demetrius Byrd, when we kept saying, please snap the ball. Snap the ball. Please. And the clock kept going down and down to the point where it was the last play of the game. If they had done it earlier, they could have gotten two plays off. But somehow, some way, Matt Flynn threw a perfect pass and Byrd caught it. And that was like the one that takes your heart away. And you're like, oh, my God, oh, my God. Oh, thank you. And it just more in the folklore of one Les Miles. Miles almost pulled one off. He almost beat Texas. Can you believe that?
That was amazing, Jordy. I'm sure you'll talk about it with your boy, Ross Dellinger, a little bit later on in the program, because that was unreal. And you know, if he had won that game, you probably would be talking about like Les Miles giving like a lifetime contract.
Yes. Yeah, that's crazy. Oh, what a goofball. But anyway, go ahead.
Flipping on over, Jordy, college basketball's AP preseason poll dropped earlier today. And boy, oh boy, Madison Square Garden is going to be rocking November the 5th.
Wow.
Because you've got the top four teams all under one roof. Yep. Kansas, Duke, Kentucky, and Michigan State. Surprisingly, Sparty, number one. But I want to kind of flip things over, talking about LSU being picked preseason number 22 in that poll. One of three SEC teams. Okay. Are you surprised seeing three teams from the Southeastern Conference make this list?
Yeah, Kentucky's 2, LSU 22, Auburn 24. All these preseason lists basically go back, all right, who did you lose? Who did you recruit? Who do you have coming back? And what did you do at the end of last year? So Auburn makes the Final Four. They lose everybody, but they're going to stick them in there. Kentucky's always going to be in there. And LSU comes in at number 22. So the SEC along with the ACC and the what other league? There's about three or four leagues that had three teams in it. I was surprised that's the first time Michigan State has been the preseason number one. I thought maybe when Magic was playing they were, but they weren't. They were number seven. Given the credence to the old cliche, it's not how you start, it's how you finish. But, yeah, Michigan State, Kentucky, Kansas, and Duke, what a doubleheader to get the season started in Madison Square Garden. That's going to be great. But LSU, I think they're going to be – look, Will Wade said we're going to be a much better offensive team. We can score the ball. The question is, can they protect the rim? Can they rebound? Because they're going to be small.
It's going to be fun to see what happens this year for the LSU Tigers, but college basketball, we're just getting that much closer to it. I know you're excited about it. I'm pretty excited about it as well, especially, as I mentioned earlier, that November 5th, like, classic. That's going to – like, the four-letter network knew what they were doing, getting this thing together, and now we have the four top teams, a potential Final Four preview to start off the season. This is exactly what you want if you're the four-letter network.
Yeah. And believe it or not, prior to that, tomorrow night is the NBA opener for the Pelicans taking on the Raptors in Toronto. That game will be on TNT, but there's still no official word on Zion Williamson's right knee. There's no timeline. There's no public diagnosis. In fact, Alvin Gentry said the number one pick still isn't formally ruled out for Tuesday's season opener. But come on, he's going to miss some time. I just don't know what it is, and they're mum's the word on the big Z. So we'll see if the Pelicans can float. Can the Pelicans do without Zion what the Saints have done without Drew? We'll see.
I think they have a chance to at least like somewhat, maybe not necessarily start off the season 6-0 or however long he's going to be out for. Because you look at that, the start of the season, it's an uphill climb for the team because they're playing some of the creme de la creme of the Western Conference. You're playing the defending NBA champions game one of an 82-game stretch. But I think they can be serviceable and get some wins when they need to. And having Zion Williamson make sure he's 100% healthy and ready to go, that could be huge.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yes. Don't rush the timetable. But the defending champs are a little bit different. They don't have that guy doing all the things that he does. He's over there on the West Coast playing for Doc Rivers. And, of course, we're talking about Kawhi Leonard. But I just think the NBA is going to be fascinating. It's wide open across the board. You talk to 25 NBA analysts, and they'll come up with 25 different picks as to who's going to come out of the East, who's going to come out of the West, and who's going to win the whole cotton picking thing. So I think that's great for NBA basketball. But, man, I'm telling you, what a great season. Knock on wood, baby. Knock on wood. Tigers, the Cajuns, the Saints, what a great season so far.
It's been amazing.
Unbelievable. Unbelievable. All right, there's your Hot Topics for the day. You know who it's brought to you by. Cajun Chef Hot Sauce. It's the best because they use the finest spices and the finest peppers. And by they, I mean the Biart family right there in St. Martinville, Louisiana. They've been doing it for nearly 90 years. That is consistency. That is excellence. That's the way it is. So do yourself a favor. If you haven't tried it, what are you waiting for? If you have, you know what I'm talking about. So bring a bottle with you wherever you go. You coming to the LSU-Auburn game, bring it with you. Man, that gumbo is going to taste better. Everything tastes better with Cajun Chef hot sauce on it. More on the LSU Tigers. More sound coming your way when we return. 15 minutes after the hour on this 21st day of October. This is the Jordy Helfrich Show on Acadiana's number one sports station. We're 1037 The Game and 1037thegame.com. We're proud of it. Come on back.
Listening to You're listening to the Jordy Helfrich Show on Acadiana Sports Station 1037 The Game. Want to get in on the action? Call us up on the Ardco Equipment Hotline at 337-706-0111.
All right, welcome back. Yeah, get things right. We are. We have. We talked about giving you tickets to the LSU-Auburn game. We also have a Half Shell Oyster House $50 gift certificate giveaway as well. Enter to win the $50 gift card to Half Shell Oyster House in the 1037 The Game Clubhouse at 1037thegame.com. One of the things that people are worrying about a little bit is LSU's field goal kicker, Cade York. And, you know, most coaches don't treat their kickers like football players. If I say too much, I'm going to take away his confidence. I'm going to leave him alone. I'll be quiet. But not Coach O. He doesn't subscribe to that theory. Cade York has dealt with some struggles of late, and Orgeron said he's going to treat him like he would any other player on the team. Quote, some people have a different philosophy about treating kickers. Don't tell them nothing, Orgeron said. That ain't me. He's going to be accountable in our program. He's going to have to answer what's wrong. And Coach O says it's all about the technique. What is his footwork? Was his timing right or wrong? What was it? He's going to have to explain. He's going to have to get better at it, just like everybody else. We see it's ongoing skill development. I don't think it's mental at all. I think it's definitely about technique. So there you go. Even the kicker's not safe from the wrath of Coach O, if necessary, and sometimes it is. So that's the one question mark that LSU fans are concerned about, because he's missing some. Terrace Marshall has been out since undergoing surgery to repair a foot fracture suffered in the win over Vanderbilt last month. Marshall has practiced in recent weeks, even dressed out for the Florida and Mississippi State games. That's good. Jack Marucci, the trainer, wide receiver coach Joe Brady, have a plan to ease Marshall along in practice this week. And Coach O's optimistic for a return against Auburn. We'll see how much he can do, O said. Jack and Brady have an excellent plan. We talked about it today. He is going to want to do everything, be ready to go, but we feel that by game time, he should be ready to play. The O-line health report is that Coach O said it's going to be the best defensive line the Tigers have faced thus far. We all know about that. Fortunately, LSU's offensive line should be 100% intact for this top 10 showdown. Left tackle Sadiq Charles will play, Orgeron said, after sitting out the Mississippi State game as a, quote, coach's decision. Right tackle Austin Deculus should also be good to go after suffering a minor injury against the Bulldogs. He might be held out of practice today or tomorrow, but he should be fine. And Coach O said it best about the O-line and what they have to do this week to prepare for Auburn.
No question. You know, last year I thought they played pretty good against this group, and we got to do it again. And just like we challenged against Florida, it's going to be led by Lloyd Cushenberry. We're going to have to play great on the offensive line this week.
Going to have to play great. Safety Jacoby Stevens was named co-SEC Defensive Player of the Week. He had 8 tackles, including a sack, and he pulled in a sweet one-handed interception in that 36-13 win over Mississippi State on Saturday. He was terrific. And now you got Grant Delpit closer to the line of scrimmage. They're both making plays. This defense looks like it's getting right and getting better. Fulton, according to Ed O, played his best game at LSU, and nobody even threw the ball over toward the freshman, Stingley. Nobody, they didn't even challenge. He had no stats during the game. Never even challenged him. So that's good. Again, you're happy coming away with a win on the road, and Ed O kind of planted that seed to the fans when he talked about what Tiger Stadium's going to be like this Saturday afternoon.
As we know, a big football game for Louisiana State University and the state of Louisiana, and I know the Tiger Stadium's going to be on fire at 2:30 p.m. Central Standard Time. We're going to need them as a winning edge. Just like we did against Florida, just like we did against Georgia, and I know our fans are going to show up early and be ready to go. We're counting on them.
Counting on them. We'll see what happens with a 2:30 kickoff in Tiger Stadium. So we've got that. Now, the Raging Cajuns kind of had some time off a little bit after their, you know, they play on a Wednesday, then they play on a Thursday. Billy Napier addressed the media today. As they're getting ready for their next ball game. They had a big, big win, and Billy Napier talked about that team win over Arkansas State.
Well, I think anytime you can go on the road and get a divisional win, it's good for your program and good for your team. Certainly puts us in position here where we can make the most of our open date and then 5 games here in the final stretch in November. So we're in position to do what we want to do, and that was important, and certainly that game, getting that win, we had a lot to do with that. I think it was a really good team win. I thought we worked well.
It really did work well. One of those team players was Raymond Calais. 8 carries, did a remarkable job, made the boast of all of his carries, and his head coach had some praise for Raymond Calais.
Yeah, he's one of the players that we're probably most proud of. You know, kind of an unheralded guy coming in. You know, some thought he was a receiver. He really had just production as a kick returner. We knew his history as a high school player and how effective he was as an inside runner at high school. So we stayed the course. He bought in. The guy's probably gained 10, 12 pounds. He's much more physical. He's much more consistent and disciplined with his eyes and his footwork. And you get the guy to the second level, and he's a home run threat.
So getting it done on the ground as well. Now, the Saints, again, with a big, big, big-time win against Chicago, 5-0 since Drew Brees went out with the thumb injury, as we've said. Up next is the Arizona Cardinals. But Teddy Bridgewater knows, you know, he played in that black and blue division when he was with the Minnesota Vikings, and he knows what a feeling it is to get a win at Soldier Field.
We stumbled a little.
It's a great feeling being coming. Able to, you know, come to Soldier Field and walk away with the victory. We knew that coming to this game, it was about attitude. And when you look at the scoreboard, you look at the stat sheet, you know, you watch the tape and you see nothing but attitude from our guys. It started up front. We knew that it was going to be a physical battle. We knew how tough their defense was. We'd heard about it all week. We just knew that we had to play physical game, and we did just that today.
They did. They bullied the Chicago Bears. They really, really did. And again, sometimes it's offense. During this stretch of five games, it's been a lot of great defense. Special teams playing their part. Survival mode, Saints know how to do that, according to Teddy.
I'd say this team knows how to survive, and that's what it's all about, having those survival skills. We do a great job of just being able to step right in if we have to and try to fill voids. But, you know, it was overall team effort today, and I'm glad we came away with the win.
No Kamara, no Cook, no, some defensive players out, some players getting hurt during the game, and still the Saints come away with a huge win. Great time in football in the state of Louisiana. Around the country, we'll go next. Ross Dellinger of Sports Illustrated will be with us here on the Jordy Helpert Show. 1037 The Game, 1037thegame.com.
Your NBC Sports Radio.
Here's three pieces of advice to live by. Never play cards with a guy whose last name is a state. Don't spit into the wind. And always get your sports talk from the Jordy Hultberg Show on Acadiana Sports Station, 1037 The Game.
And we welcome you back. Threes are wild. 333 on this Monday, October 21st, under some rainy, miserable kind of weather. But that's okay, as long as it's good on a Saturday. That's what we crave. And after LSU beat Mississippi State in Starkville, I centered my attention on the whiteout at Penn State. That's where our friend Ross Dellinger of Sports Illustrated was. So how was the whiteout, my friend? How you doing?
Good, yeah. The whiteout was pretty cool, you know. It was neat to just the student section. I'd heard about was pretty incredible with their chants and their pom-poms, all their white pom-poms. It's just fascinating that so many people are committed to it. You know, we're committed to wearing the white.
Yes.
And also so many people were committed to going to the game. I mean, you know, I had covered, of course, as you know, Georgia LSU for a long time and the SEC for a long time, and there is almost always empty seats in a stadium, even for the biggest games. And I could not find an empty seat in Beaver Stadium. I mean, it was pretty incredible.
That is. We do the gold games and all that, and nobody wears gold because the girls don't think they look good in gold. So they got to change that. They got to figure out some other way to do it. All right. Boy, what a crazy weekend it was in college football. I guess I got to start with Wisconsin favored by 31.5 points at Illinois. And, man, the Fighting Illini come back and win it. Knox Wisconsin out there done.
Yeah, it was kind of shocking to see that score. I was walking into Beaver Stadium at Penn State when I looked at my phone and saw that the Illini had stormed back to take the lead with that field goal and win the game. It was that was a shocking one. Kind of puts a little less drama, less juice in this weekend's matchup at Penn State or at Ohio State. You know, Wisconsin travels to Ohio State, so that was kind of billed as this top five undefeated showdown, and now you kind of feel like that the Buckeyes might, if Wisconsin can't beat Illinois, they're obviously the Illini kind of found some chinks in the armor that you got to think Ohio State will do the same.
Yeah, I'm with you. Mizzou's another team that hit the road and lost. They entered the game number 22 in the AP poll, set to take on the 1-5 Vanderbilt Commodores. Commodores fresh off a blowout loss at home against UNLV, and somehow Vandy comes up and wins it 21-14. Go figure.
Yeah, college football for you. You know, Missouri's season has been anything but normal. Losses to Wyoming and Vanderbilt, and then wins over South Carolina and Ole Miss, and even beating the heck out of Troy, who's a good Group of Five team. It is a bizarre schedule that Missouri's had so far. So I'm not sure exactly what to make of them, you know. And Kelly Bryant has struggled in spots a little bit. So, they were kind of thought of, especially after Georgia lost to South Carolina. You kind of thought, hey, Missouri might be able to challenge for the East with against Florida and Georgia. And then they go out and lose to Vandy.
Go figure, right? Go figure. Ross Dellinger joining us, Sports Illustrated. Tua Tagovailoa gets hurt, high ankle sprain, gets that quick surgery done, vows to be back for the LSU game after the high ankle sprain surgery. So I don't know if that's going to be quick enough time for him to come back, but according to everybody out there who's anybody, they say Joe Burrow's taking over as the front runner for the Heisman. Are you in agreement there?
Well, you know, the injury to Tua is certainly going to hurt, I think, or impact negatively at least his Heisman campaign, because he's just going to miss a game, you know, and and we saw last year Tua missed a game with the SEC championship game. He was in and out of, and you know, it does impact your numbers, and it just affects you. I think I saw maybe it's been 20-plus years since a Heisman winner has missed a game. So it does impact you. What Burrow is doing is incredible. I mean, I went and looked, and this is a crazy stat. He's between his incompletions and his touchdown passes, I think there's maybe 16 a differential of 16 passes, so he's got like 45 incompletions this season, and 29 maybe touchdown
29.
Passes.
Wow.
So yeah, that would be 16. It's just crazy, and he leads the nation in accuracy, completion percentage at 79%. It's hard to kind of wrap your mind around how accurate he's been, and Alabama game is the one that kind of makes you or breaks you recently with LSU players in the Heisman. Yeah. We go back to Leonard Fournette, you know, in 2015, destined to go to New York, and goes to Alabama and gains whatever 20-25 yards in never heard from again type deal, you know. So that'll be a big one for Joe.
You think if CBS had a mulligan, they'd use it and forego the Georgia Notre Dame primetime game and leave 1-2 like they always did? First time since 2010, they're not playing in a primetime. I understand Alabama has owned the series. I understand all that. but rarely do you get one versus two. I guess they didn't think that was going to be the case this year.
No, I don't know how many people thought that was going to be the case. You know, maybe some people in that LSU football operations building, maybe, but otherwise, you know, what they did, the prudent thing, which CBS does a lot. They don't take a ton of risks on the games they select. They usually do kind of the prudent play, and so over the summer when they have to submit, you know, which game, which weekend will be their nighttime doubleheader, they get one a year. They pick, you know, two teams that had participated in the playoff the last 2 years, you know, Notre Dame and Georgia. So I understand it, but if they had a mulligan, they would probably use it. You know, they probably would. you know, I'm a little surprised that they didn't negotiate something with ESPN, which they've done in the past to push that one to prime time, you know. But they decided, they announced today, I think, you know, they decided, hey, we're, you know, it's going to go in that normal 2:30 slot, which if you're a sports writer, you're very happy about.
That's a good thing. That's right. I understand. And, you know, anyway, if you're playing at 2:30, you're a pretty good club. So that's good. Is a lot of criticism coming toward Jeremy Pruitt, not only because Tennessee's not very good, but, you know, you publicly, out in front of everybody's eyes, blast the your quarterback, and then you kind of, whether intentionally or accidentally, you kind of lay a hand on the old face mask and grab it a little bit. Well, what's the latest going on in Knoxville?
You know, I'm not, I'll be honest, I know, you know, he's taking some flack for that. Jordy, I'm the son of a football coach. I saw my dad on the football field do some things as a head high school coach. Now, this was 20, 30 years ago, but I'm not, you know, when it comes to that, I'm not as hard, probably. I have a different type of opinion, you know. But, you know, you got to be cognizant, you know. You're on national TV, and the cameras pick up everything nowadays. You got to be a little more cognizant of stuff like that. Even just touching a player in any way, now you're just going to be scrutinized. So better off just not doing it at all. And then, you know, Jeremy Pruitt was back in the news just a few hours ago at his press conference when he blasted the officiating in the game against Alabama. I'm sure he'll get fined there.
Yep. That was my next question. Is it just me, or is college officiating getting worse? I mean, I was watching the Florida South Carolina game, and there was some egregious calls, no calls in that one. I mean, I know they're human beings, and I know just like players make mistakes, coaches make mistakes, referees make mistakes. But man, alive, is it getting worse?
You know, I think, and I wrote a story about this in August. I was embedded with a few officials, the SEC officials, during a camp at Georgia the first week of August, and got to learn a little more. You know, what's happening is because of social media and just the internet in general, but definitely because of social media, DVR, all those things, we're just able to see more of these calls and scrutinize them more than ever. So I don't think officiating has necessarily got worse. I just think we're noticing more of it. You know, we're noticing the bad more often. And it's unfortunate because, you know, the officials, are specifically the ones I was, you know, around for 2 days down there in Georgia, I mean, they pour everything into this. They really do. And I just think we're noticing a lot more of the mistakes because of things like social media and DVR and just different other internet devices.
Yeah. But we found out, I found out a new rule in Washington. The Huskies had a player lay down to try to blend in with the paint in the end zone. It worked as he took a throwback pass on a kickoff return and had a big gain. However, it was flagged by the refs. Apparently, it's illegal to attempt to deceive the other team on a trick play. I thought that's what a trick play was all about, deception. I never heard of that thing before.
I know. I had never heard of that either. The dang refs ruin everything, right? I mean, because that was a cool play, and it's funny because a few hours later – I'm at sitting up in the press box of the Penn State game, and lo and behold, KJ Hamler, Penn State's best player and one of their two returners on a kickoff, does the exact same thing, lays on his stomach in the end zone, pops up, and is ready to get a lateral. Now, the other returner fair caught the kickoff, so he, you know, he couldn't, but you know, and he didn't blend in with the end zone at Penn State, but he laid down flat on his stomach. And so it made me think they had to see that, what Washington did before the game, the coaches, and told KJ to do this. So that was interesting. But I did see the Washington play, and the only difference, yeah, in the Penn State was, you know, KJ did not really blend in with the end zone. So I guess it would have, maybe that one would have been legal.
Yes, unbelievable. I've never heard of such a thing in all my life. Your thoughts, LSU-Auburn this Saturday, another 2:30 kickoff. It's a great rivalry. There have been some really close games, back and forth, some historical games. When you look at both of these clubs, what do you think?
Yeah, I mean, the games are always seem to be wild. It's hard to explain to somebody the Auburn LSU series includes six interceptions in like one half of football, one of the games, another game, a barn burned, yeah. Another game just a few years ago, LSU yep. stormed back from a 20-point deficit in the second half. You know, you had the Les Miles fired game that ended with LSU touchdown, and then they reversed it, and then Les Miles was fired. It is a crazy series, and I'd expect it to be crazy again. I really do think this is going to be a close game. I think Auburn's front is pretty good, and they're going to find a way to get pressure. And it's just, you know, we've just seen, even against pressure, Joe Burrow be so good and so accurate. It's hard to go against them. So I do think LSU's going to win, but maybe it's a little closer than that 12.5 point spread.
Okay, we shall see. Interesting stuff. Where will your travels take you this weekend? Are you going to stay home and just observe all of them?
Yeah, I'm going to stay home this weekend, and we'll be watching all the games Saturday from the couch.
There you go. Here's one on Burrow for you that I found interesting. In high school, he completed 75.6% of his passes. He had 30 touchdowns and one interception. This season in college, 79.4% completion percentage, 29 touchdowns and only three interceptions. I thought college was supposed to be a little bit tougher, but he's playing better now than he was in high school. It's a remarkable, remarkable story, and he's having one of those years. I never thought I'd see it. Never did.
No, it's incredible, and especially when you look at, you know, just in the grand scheme of LSU offensive, you know, historic, the offense, it's just wild that they finally got this player. In a coach, of course, Joe Brady coming in, overhauling the offense, doing all this stuff. It's one of those kind of special type years.
One last one before we let you get out of here. Another top 10 team that LSU gets to play. They beat Texas when they were a top 10 team. They beat Florida. If they win this one, a lot of LSU fans are saying, is that finally going to be enough to catapult LSU to number one in the country?
You got to beat Alabama. You know, you got to beat number one to get number one. So I think if you beat Alabama, absolutely. In fact, if you beat Alabama at Alabama, you probably get, I think in the AP poll, okay, there's maybe 60 or 65 first place votes. You probably get all but about, you know, 6 to 8. You might get them all. So you got to beat the Tide.
Might get them all. Okay. All right. Makes sense. All right. Well, enjoy your travel-free weekend. It's always fun talking with you, buddy. We'll do it again next week. Thank you so much.
All right, Jordy. See you.
All right, you take care, my friend. That brought to you by Peterbilt of Louisiana, the best truck on the road. Yes, indeed. The safest, the most reliable, the most dependable. We have offices in Lafayette, in Baton Rouge, New Orleans, and in Lake Charles. Peterbilt of Louisiana. It's the envy of every truck driver. They all want to own a Peterbilt. We sell new. We sell used. We even lease them out to you. Peterbilt of Louisiana. The latest news on Zion Williamson. Yuck. Next.
All the best guests join the Jordy Holtberg Show. If you missed an interview, you can check it out on demand at 1037thegame.com. Now, back to the show.
Oh, my goodness. My Monday just took a turn. This news, breaking news from the New Orleans Pelicans. Zion Williamson had surgery today to repair a torn meniscus in his right knee. He's expected to miss 6 to 8 weeks. Ugh. Oh, man. I don't know. We'll see. We'll see how, it is what it is. It happens. Hate to see it happen. It happened in practice, I am told. And so that certainly takes a little bit of the luster off the enthusiasm for this Pelicans franchise. I haven't looked at the schedule. They normally don't play as many games early in the season as they do come November, December, and on. So we might get by a little bit. You may not miss. I'll have to look at the schedule to see how many games he would miss in that 6 to 8 week time frame. Pelicans have said it's Drew Holiday's team. Well, Drew, it's your team now, so you got to carry them. So we will see what happens. But such sad news there. And again, Pelicans opening up the season, national television on TNT tomorrow in Toronto against the reigning NBA champion Toronto Raptors. So certainly that will be the big storyline, his absence. Jacoby Stevens, co-SEC Defensive Player of the Week for his efforts against Mississippi State. That defense looks to be turning it around a little bit at the right time. So we'll see. We shall see. Nothing of significance happened on this day in sports history, so we'll just skip that today and go straight to our birthday wishes. If today, October 21st, is your day, oh my goodness, you share it with Kim Kardashian. Happy 39th birthday to Kimbo, right? Judge Judy is 77 years old today, so happy birthday to her. I saw something somewhere. She makes a gazillion dollars sitting up there on TV doing that court TV stuff. A gazillion. Amazing. So, special thanks to our guest, Brooks Cabina of The Advocate, talking LSU. Bob Rose, Canal Street Chronicles, talking about the Saints. Ross Dellinger of Sports Illustrated. CD, thank you so much for today and every day. Job well done. Thanks to all of you for listening. Thanks to our partners that make it possible each and every day. We'll preview the NBA season tomorrow. Henry Hayes will join me. More on the Tigers, more on the Saints. Sorry about that, Z. Thoughts and prayers to you, buddy. Get well get right. So until tomorrow, same time, 2 to 4, same great station, 1037 The Game, 1037thegame.com. I'm Jordy Helper. So long, everybody.
Live from the 237.